So yesterday we learned about the capture of James Whitey Bulger, of course, one of the FBI's most wanted fugitives. And I went over to the FBI website yesterday, and oh, there's my face. No, actually, I'm kidding about that. But it was interesting to see Bulger's face right on the front page with the red caption captured underneath it. If you click on 10 Most Wanted, you see Osama bin Laden's face and also the word captured right underneath. If you go back to that homepage, you can see Aywan al-Zahrawi, of course, the number two, now the number one at al-Qaeda, who's one of the most wanted terrorists. There's a bit of a shuffle of the most wanted lists, and it's a number of lists on the FBI website. And we wanted to explore how the FBI uses these lists and whether the reward, or at least implicit or explicit reward for capture or information leading to the capture of any of them, still drives the FBI investigative process. Katrin Einhorn joins us, a journalist for our partner, The New York Times. Katrin, good morning.
Good morning.
And Athan Theoharis joins us. Athan Theoharis joins us. He's a professor emeritus of history at Marquette University, specializing in the history of the FBI. One of his books is Abuse of Power, How Cold War Surveillance and Secrecy Policy Shaped the Response to 9/11. He's on the line from Milwaukee. Professor, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Katrin, first of all, how has the set of lists changed on the FBI website? I have a couple of names I want to ask you about, but what do you see when you look at this site?
Well, the 10 most wanted list isn't going to change immediately. There's this whole process that they have in order to update the list. They basically go to their 56 field offices and they solicit them for names for candidates. So those 56 field offices look at all their investigations. They say, this guy might really benefit from the publicity that the list could generate. They submit the names. Then there's a review process at headquarters. And then ultimately the director of the FBI makes a final approval on who's added.
All right. So I'm looking at 10 most wanted. I mean, Whitey Bulger, of course, is, you know, a legendary figure, even though he's 81 and not much of a threat. Obviously, he's wanted for a lot of murder, and he was an FBI informant for a while. His case is just full of legendary color. Osama bin Laden, don't even need to talk about him. But what about what appears to be the number two on the list now, maybe moves up to number one, I don't know, Semyon Miglovich? Not really catchy.
He's not a household name necessarily. And it's important to understand that the list isn't ranked. So
right.
It's not like the person who's in the first space on the list is the most wanted. There's no ranking. They say that would be unfair to victims, and that's not the point of the list to begin with. But the guy who you're talking about, he's from Ukraine originally. He's accused in this multimillion-dollar scheme. He's accused of defrauding thousands of investors.
A company in Canada.
Yeah, but headquartered in Pennsylvania.
But to use a Canadian company, I mean, that's just really nasty. That's awful. But this guy's a serious fugitive, and we obviously are interested in all of the names on the lists. And financial crimes and white-collar crimes are just as serious as other crimes. Athan Theoharis, how much has the reward issue been important in bringing fugitives to justice in the past, and what do you think the significance of it is today?
I mean, the list itself?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a reward. Do people actually go to the list, and is it like America's Most Wanted, where people want to be involved, or is it mostly an FBI marketing thing?
I don't think necessarily the reward is the central part of it. It is to identify individuals for whom the public can provide information that leads to their apprehension. The 10 Most Wanted list was formally initiated in 1950, but dating from the 1930s, FBI officials and the director personally invited Americans to report to the FBI, either writing to him directly or the local field office, information that pertained to suspicious or criminal activities in their area. So the 10 Most Wanted list is both a law enforcement tool and also a public relations tool.
Right. And you sort of described that as well, Katrin Einhorn. We've gone from organized crime figures, and Whitey Bulger is certainly in that category. Mafia characters as well have shown up on the list of most wanted. But, terrorism probably has as much profile as any of those groups in more recent decades, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, and a lot of people, I think, sort of thought, well, maybe Ayman al-Zawahiri will move into the top 10 most wanted list because he's on the most wanted terrorist list and he's got a $25 million bounty on his head. But in fact, those two lists are probably going to be separate. They sort of didn't want to answer that definitively, but the sense that the agents who I spoke with yesterday gave me is that the only reason that bin Laden was on both lists is that he was on the most wanted list before the terrorist list even came into existence. That started after 9/11. That started in October 2001.
Right.
So they sort of cross-listed him. They put him on both lists, and now they kind of want to keep the lists
right, separate.
That's
Catherine Einhorn, journalist for our partner, The New York Times. Ethan Theo Harris, before we go, you know, when John Dillinger was captured, they used his girlfriend in the red dress as a way of fingering him coming out of a theater in Chicago, I believe it was. The girlfriend figured prominently in the Whitey Bulger case. Isn't that right?
Right. And what's interesting about it is that there was this realization that they hadn't been able to obtain information about Bulger for over 16 years, and that if they appealed to women, they might have seen the girlfriend, which would lead them to Bulger.
And how did they do that?
By putting this information out about the girlfriend and inviting on these particular social media sites, if they have information about her, they should report it to the FBI, and the result is they obtain Bulger. But look at it this way. The real problem is Bulger is a Boston criminal. He's apprehended in California. So that speaks to the real difficulty of identifying someone who you think is dangerous. And by inviting the public to provide information, it surely assisted an agency that has limited resources. When the most wanted list is created in 1950, there are 9,000 FBI personnel, roughly 4,000 agents and 5,000 support staff. So it's very difficult to have this nationwide initiative.
Well, it's sort of a traditional operation of the list in the Bulger case and a very untraditional sort of SEAL Team 6 resolution to the Osama bin Laden case there. Catherine Einhorn from The New York Times and Ethan Theo Harris, professor at Marquette University. Thanks so much to both of you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.